spine
and sprocket.
Know, O Prince, that between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the gleaming cities, and the years of the rise of the son of Arias, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world like blue mantles beneath the stars. Nemedia, Ophir, Branthian, Hyperborea, Zamora with its dark-haired women and towers of spider-haunted mysteries, Zingra with its chivalry, Koth that bordered on the pastoral lands of Shem, Stygia with its shadow-guarded tombs, Hyrcania whose riders wore steel and silk and gold. But the proudest kingdom of the world was Aquilonia, reigning supreme in the dreaming west. Hither came Conan the Cimmerian, black-haired, sullen-eyed, sword in hand, a thief, a reaver, a slayer, with gigantic melancholies and gigantic mirth, to tread the jeweled thrones of the earth under his sandaled feet.
That was the introduction to tonight's reading.
Or,
I hope you've all done your reading.
I've done my reading, Mike.
I've too.
Dennis?
Okay. Ditto.
And actually, that's the introduction to all the Conan stories, isn't it?
Well, I think it's at the beginning of all of the comic books.
Uh-huh.
I've read a bunch of the comic books, and I think they put that right at the beginning.
That's where I grew very, very familiar with it.
Yeah.
It's at the front of the movie.
Oh, that's right. Yes, it is at the beginning of the movie.
Both of the Arnies, I believe.
Yeah. Hmm. But here it was at the beginning of the first story, and we decided to read the first three Conan. No, wait a minute. Let me start again. The first three Conan stories.
Conan. No, did you look it up?
No. But I had a friend when I lived in Madison. He was a big Conan fan, and he was determined to change the world in the pronunciation. He said Conan. He said it's Conan. I'm going to call it Conan. But he also insisted on calling Salem's Lot, you know, the Stephen King movie?
Yes.
Salem. Salem's Lot. Because Salem is short for Jerusalem. Mm. So he called it Salem's
okay.
Lot. Oh, yeah. Salem. First I read Salem's Lot, and then I read Conan the Barbarian, and I thought, boy, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Well, I had a friend.
I got it all wrong.
Growing up, whose name was Conan.
Oh, really?
But he spelled it K-A-N-Y-O-N.
Oh.
And well, then he would go around saying, salam and greetings, my friend.
Really?
Yeah. So
I play tennis with a guy named Conan.
Do you really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's not Sumerian. He's Indian.
He might be Sumerian Indian.
He might be.
Yeah, yeah, the Sumerian section of India. Is he a good tennis player?
He's better than me, unfortunately.
Does he jump over the net and smash your teeth out with his racket at the end of it?
That's not legal, actually, in tennis.
Frowned upon.
It's frowned upon, yeah.
And we have with us tonight, well, Dave.
I'm Mike.
I'm Jeff. This is Spine and Sprocket.
And I'm Dennis.
Our guest is Dennis.
And Dennis, why aren't you your special feature guest tonight? Can you give us some of your Conan background or something? Or
can we see your credentials? Did you bring your dossier? Do you have a dossier?
I bring no papers.
Oh, no.
I never bring papers. I graded papers for a long time. That's why I don't bring any with me.
So you're a literary professor in a past life.
Yes, according to some people, I was better at literature than I was at mathematics.
So you taught both, or?
I taught math, science, and chemistry, as well as computer science.
And what's your connection to Conan?
I am a major mythology fan and science fiction and fantasy reader and moviegoer.
Yes, he is.
Those are good credentials for this show. And you're a little nutty.
This is true according to most people.
Yeah, okay. So great for this show.
And so we were going to delve into the Conan stuff in the next couple of shows, tonight and next show. And I had versions that with the Frazetta covers on my shelf, and pulled them out to have us start to do the readings from that. And I think, I don't know, Jeff and I communicated, or maybe all three of us, Mike, and that they have the Lynn Carter,
additional Lester Del Rey.
Additional writing. They reissued them. They put them in probable order of Conan's life. So they books start with him young, and then the new authors, Sprague L. DeCamp. I mean, I think we should look at it maybe, but yeah, Sprague L. DeCamp sounds about right.
L. Sprague DeCamp.
L. Sprague DeCamp.
Don't get it wrong, or he's going to come and visit you.
L. Sprague DeCamp.
Dennis is probably very familiar with L. Sprague DeCamp.
You remember some of the right? Well, jump in. Help me out.
I've read a few of the stories, although I don't prefer them compared to the Howard versions, because I think he's a purer and a crisper writer. I think that he takes more time to go into the mental process of Conan, as opposed to just the physical hack and slash and chase the women.
Well, those are the parts I like most.
Yeah, truly. Those are the reasons.
That's what
I
makes the movies more entertaining than the book.
I kept thinking in the movie, when's he going to start chasing to women?
So instead of that series,
we're reading. Yes, we've decided to go back to the purest version, the version that was fairly recently re-released as the original Conan, unedited, and in the order in which they were published. So these are the first three stories that were published in Weird Tales, I think, maybe, or Amazing Stories, one of those. Mm-hmm.
Amazing Stories.
Oh, yeah. Amazing Stories. I think.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, I think, yeah, well, one of those. Anyway. This is not the authoritative history of that stuff. It's just stuff we're recalling from memory.
Yeah, from our flawed memory.
And our first story
The first story ever published was called
The Phoenix on the Sword.
Yeah. The Phoenix on the Sword. On the Sword.
Well, I was going to say the Phoenix of the Sword.
Oh, no, it's on the Sword.
Caught myself. And I thought, should I jump right in?
Jump right in, Dave.
I underlined. Well, I think we had read the Shannara last book.
Yeah, sort of.
And I think I quickly was struck by the level of writing compared to the Shannara books. Right? Yeah.
The level of writing.
And so I underlined, or maybe it's because I also have graded papers for students, and put nice word choice. Today it's called nice word choice. Word choice is the new thing.
That's you can accepted.
You can say that as a teacher?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you put a little, like my coworker puts a little smiley face and a WC when she likes it, or she'll put like a frowny face and a WC if they are repeating a...
That would be a not nice word choice?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah. All right. Or a plain face.
Wow.
So I underlined.
School is complicated.
It is, yeah.
I didn't put a smiley faces, but I underlined in the first page the word veritable, furtively, sardonic, countenance, malevolently, somber giant whose dusky skin, and a phrase, lounged like a great lazy cat on a silken couch.
Yeah. Very good language.
Now, am I over...
No. The
is he an okay writer then? Or
I find it hard to believe that someone with his background, living in a rather rural Texan environment...
Is that a...
Came up with that kind
that's,
of...
that's what's hard to believe.
Fluidity in his language. I would expect him to be a little more earthy.
Or blunt.
And yes. And, and far less fluent and vocabulistic than he is.
Yeah. It struck me right away that he writes like he's been reading Shakespeare.
You thought so.
And a lot of other things.
Mike?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm just struck by the style, the prose. It's, compared to Sword of Shannara, so much better.
Okay.
Yeah.
So much more interesting.
And okay, it's not that he just sticks in a ye and a thee and a thou.
No.
Here and there. You know, it's you can just, it. Every sentence exudes that.
Yeah.
Careful craftsmanship. Which makes up for the shortcomings of the story, which I thought there were many shortcomings in the story, but I thought the fact that it was so much fun to read was really carried me through it.
You mean plot-wise, or
yeah, plot? Well, you know, just that it wasn't like a. And I don't read a lot of short stories, so maybe that's part of the problem. But it wasn't like it had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
No, you kind of jump right in, I guess, in a short story.
You kind of jump right in. It was more like a... And the following two stories, too, just struck me as more like a slice of life or like a tone poem, they might call it in music, or just like a mood piece.
Hmm. Of necessity, though, doesn't he have to do that because of the publication that he's intending to... use
yeah, he's
as
writing for
his medium.
A short story publication, right?
Yes, and I think that was kind of common in those days to write in that fashion. And I think he was writing around the same time as H.P. Lovecraft, is that right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I haven't read much H.P. Lovecraft, but it strikes me as Lovecraftian sometimes in the way he talks about the fantastical things that are going on.
Yeah, and they were in correspondence, written correspondence with each other.
Oh, okay.
Lovecraft and Howard.
And Howard, yes.
I think they were able to meet once or twice as well.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Did they have fun?
They scared each other.
Yeah.
It depends on which gods you believe in, I think. Yes.
Well, so it's too bad that he died at such a young age, but...
Yeah, that was tragic, too, yeah. to read about his story.
Did he... I don't remember. How did he die? Conan killed him?
Yeah.
Crom killed
him?
He just
run through with a sword. Yeah, it was suicide.
It was, okay.
His mother was ill or something, didn't it say that? And he became despondent, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, tragic.
Yeah.
And Lovecraft also tragic. Suicide too, or died of malnutrition or something?
I'm not sure in the case of Lovecraft whether or not that happened to him, but a lot of good authors wind up having issues with friends and family passing away, and it creating a deteriorating effect on their own livelihood as well as their longevity.
Yeah. Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe, too.
That's why I'm glad I don't have any skill.
Yeah. And if you read my writing, you'd think, this guy's going to live forever.
And he's got a whole bunch of friends.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did this go for the first story? This is the first introduction of the world to Conan, and I don't know that we can go back and feel actually what it was like in the 30s to read this, but how did you find this story? I don't mean how did you find it, because it's right at the beginning of the book, but...
There it is.
Can you, Jeff, give me the synopsis again? I rely on you for that.
Okay. Well, Renda, the story actually opens not with Conan, but...
Conan.
With, yeah, okay. All right. I'm going to try.
Conan.
With Conan. With a couple of guys, Escalante and Thor, what was his name? Uma Thurman. No.
Prospero.
Prospero?
No.
Oh, they were talking about Prospero.
Yeah, it was
Ronaldo?
No. He's talking about them. But anyway.
Escalante.
The guy from the Stygian guy
realm.
And Escalante,
yes,
were talking, and they were plotting for the death of Conan. And they had...
He's a king. He's the king at this point.
Conan
right?
is the king. They refer to him as King Conan. And that's kind of how we first hear about him.
Yes.
It's just and there's sort of this offhand, oh, we're going to kill King Conan.
Right.
Tonight.
Right,
we've
right,
got right. This, we've right. got this great conspiracy going. We've got the guards in on it. We've got all these other people that are collaborating. We've made sure that his bodyguards are going to be somewhere else at the time. And we've got all this together because Conan was apparently kind of a usurper. He'd come and taken over the throne. And for whatever reason, these guys didn't like it. And they wanted to take over.
Right,
so
the throne of Babylonia.
They hatched this plan. And then we see the Stygian actually is the slave to Escalante. And Escalante is sort of the mastermind behind the plan. And the Stygian is a bit of an underling, but he's got, you can tell the Stygian has got something up his craw about the whole thing, and he kind of has other ideas about it. And he mentions in this, and I thought this was really interesting, he mentions that if he hadn't lost the ring, with a capital R,
Gollum.
Roles would Gollum. Be reversed, and that he Gollum. Would be taking over the throne instead of Escalante. And I thought, the ring, oh look, the ring, another ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Only this was pre
Tolkien. Pre-Tolkien, yeah.
Not like Shannara, where it was.
Yeah.
And the ring was not like one of those kind of rings anyway.
Well, we don't know really what it was.
Wasn't exactly. It revealed in the... Oh, no, that's another story with the snake.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of stories with snakes.
Yeah. Well, it's involves Set.
Yeah.
So you
not sex, but Set.
Which was a god. Mitra is mentioned early. This is a very famous Conan saying, right? By Mitra, you know.
Yeah.
My background with the Conan thing was I had subscribed to the Planet of the Apes. I was a Planet of the Apes nut for quite a while. And had the large comic book format magazine. It was a Marvel magazine, Planet of the Apes. They did articles and then adaptations of the movies into comic book form and then original stories and other things and articles about behind the scenes on the ape stuff. And then it died. And I got this horrible notice one day.
The ape died? Who died?
The whole magazine.
Oh, the magazine died.
And
feeling sorry for the ape.
It was like, your subscription is over. You have 7 issues left. Would you like to transfer to these other fine things? And it was, I don't know, Conan. Was. So I'm like, oh, shoot, okay, I guess this Conan thing would be okay. And so I switched it, and I started getting from issue 7 on in the large Marvel magazine format, Savage Sword of Conan, which are all right upstairs in my bedroom. If you'd like me to run up and get them and read them all to you, there's 348 issues or something. And yeah, that was it, man. It captured me. Alfredo Alcala, the artist, wonderful, wonderful work. Real fantasy land. It was light on magic, and you know the savagery thing. And then I was hooked. So I'm used to reading Mitra, but I just now looked it up on Wikipedia that actually Mitra is probably loosely based on a Vedic and Zoroastrian figure of the same name.
Wow.
So there,
and we know, it, and we all know what that is.
Well, I was.
Well, we know about the Vedics. Vedics were Indian, from the Indian subcontinent.
Now, see, I didn't know the Vedics. I knew the Zoroastrians from my comparative religions class in college. Yeah. Believe it or not, I still remember that. So I didn't know there was a real Mitra.
Well, and
Mitra Varuna, in some.
Place. I thought that was really interesting, and that's one of the things when I read the Conan books back in the 70s. That's one of the things that I was very. That I liked a lot was that he didn't, Robert Howard did not introduce 20, 50, 100 foreign weird names. He didn't make up names for everything. He kind of drew from real history. So he mentions Asgard, and he mentions the Picts, and he mentions all these things that are in our actual history.
Mm-hmm.
And so he saves a lot of time by not having to explain what all of those things are, because we all have a little bit of knowledge about, maybe, hopefully,
I did.
A little bit of what those things are. So it saves us a lot of time and gives us a frame of reference that, for me, made it sound really believable. In fact, I may have even thought at one time, gee, I better go look at my history book. I don't remember the Hyperborean age and the Aquilonian
continent.
Did you
really?
Well, I read these back in 7th.
Grade.
Well, 8th grade, I think. 8th grade or
really?
Freshman in high school.
See, I did not, because when I would go to the bookstore and I saw the Conan paperback books, the ones I have now that are reissues or something, they struck me as, like, because they had the Frazetta covers with the amazingly curvy women and freaky, scary, you know. Those were powerful images, and they struck me as very adult, bloody, and I thought it was, like, too adult. I shouldn't buy that.
Naughty.
I thought it was, like, a naughty book. So, I looked at him going, that barbarian looks cool, but I don't know. That's got to be, like, too scary for me or something, or too adult.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I shied away from it until the magazine, yeah.
Yeah. That's what drew me toward him.
Me too. <Yeah. laughs> Now, you buy the original. When did you first buy them?
Yeah, I bought the originals back in the 70s, and... I loved all the covers. The cover art was fantastic.
Yeah.
And when I went and looked at the inside of the book and saw that there were very few
pictures,
if any, illustrations, occasional drawings of swords or maybe a particular... A sigil that might have existed as a tattoo or something on one of his friends, I was amazed because I thought there was going to be more in terms of illustration to go along with the tale, especially when you got into the large fights. I was looking for something, I guess, that was more similar to a comic, which eventually it evolved into when Marvel picked things up.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, those Frazettas. And this artist is, I'll find his name. But his work's fine in here. But, you know, I think you're following in Frazetta. I don't think you can hold much of a candle to him.
Yeah.
Mark Schultz.
Yeah, and he talked about it in his foreword. He wrote the foreword, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Mike? And he did talk about, and he had great things to say. It was a great introduction to read. Yeah, foreword or introduction, one of the two. And then... but yeah, his illustrations, they kind of, you know, they sit there on the page. I mean, they're good. They're better than I can do, you know. But yeah, just after seeing Frazetta. So.
Yeah.
But it's not a show about Frazetta. It's a show about the sword on the phoenix.
That's right.
No, the phoenix on the sword.
Phoenix on the sword, yeah.
And so we see the Stygian, anyway, picking up our story, we see this the Stygian going and making, going to one of the other conspirators. And sort of making a plan and saying, look, I want to get rid of Escalante and make you the king. And you just need to help me then. Mm-hmm. And this conspirator then said, yes, yes, whatever. Yeah, I can do that. And he brought out his ring. And it turned out to be the very ring that the Stygian had lost somewhere. And so he kills the guy, which I would have done. That's my ring. Stabbed him immediately and took the ring, which he seemed very happy about. And then from there we go to a dream sequence where Conan is having this is our first introduction to Conan, really, is this dream sequence where he's in his palace and he meets with a mystical character who inscribes his sword with this phoenix. And I'm not a fan of dream sequences of any kind ever in any movie other than the Salvador Dali orchestrated dream sequence in one of the Alfred Hitchcock movies. I can't remember which one it is right now. It's the only one. But I don't like dream sequences in books and stories, so I kind of read through that quickly and only realized later how important it was. But then we see the following sequence is Conan in his room, talking to his right-hand man, Prospero. And I love the way these names, because these names, too, I thought, these are not like fantasy names like you see.
Although Prospero's a little too familiar, too. Did you not like him? Or?
Escalante caught me because I remember him from Cull. He was a priest, a good priest, in a Cull story.
Which is a Robert Howard story?
Yeah, Howard.
That preceded Conan?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that surprised me that he'd use the same name twice and have practically diametrically opposed types of characters. A sinister politician that wants to overthrow the Conan government of Aquilonia versus someone who's trying to defend, I believe it was his sister, and... use his wizardry and skill to help Conan recall go and overcome a witch, if memory serves me correctly.
Well, Howard caught a lot of flack for that, and he killed himself because of it.
And Prospero, isn't that a Shakespeare?
Yeah, it's from
The Island.
The
one.
Tempest.
The Tempest, yeah.
And Rinaldo is also... in a Shakespeare play, I think As You Like It or one of those. So his choice of names I thought was interesting. Anyway, so now Conan is in his chambers and it comes time for the conspirators to gather some henchmen and 20 of them burst into Conan's room. And they were expecting to find him sleeping and slothful. But instead, what do they find?
Him coming in the window, robbing the place? Or is that the third story?
That's the third story.
That's the third one.
No, he's standing there.
Yeah.
He's standing there, sword drawn, ready for them.
No helmet, though, I remember, right?
Yeah, he didn't have time to get his helmet on, nor take the shield from where it was hanging on the wall. But he was standing there, sword in hand, which kind of threw them off, and I thought, wow, that's cool. He's good.
And 20 to 1, hardly a fair fight.
20 to 1, right.
They never had a chance.
Yeah, they never did. And there he is, standing there, ready to wreak havoc. And he does.
And he does.
And he does.
And that's a big battle scene. I guess what struck me a lot was this wasn't as hack and slash as I thought it was going to be, these books at all.
I remember it being much more hack and slashy as when I read them as a teenager.
And my comic books were, I thought.
But yeah.
The original ones from back in the Savage Sword of Conan.
And I kept thinking, this is all interesting, but when are they going to start hacking and slashing? Because this is sword and sorcery. Let's get on with it.
But you like it.
The writing was good. Well, the writing was so good. It was
the writing is excellent. Yeah.
Mike has an example.
This was after he dispatched with the 20 bad guys.
Yeah.
But he did take a little bit of a wound.
He did.
And he's with his court physicians. And he says, "See first to the dagger wound in my side," he bade the court physicians. "Rinaldo wrote me a deathly song there, and Keen was the stylus."
Ah, yes. What's a stylus?
Something you stick in.
No, it's what you write with, isn't it?
Yes. Well, he wrote him deathly song.
Yes.
So that's why he's a stylist. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the end of a pen when you do calligraphy?
Yes.
It would also be something that you would use if you were writing on clay tablets.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And somebody that...
stick type device.
Mm-hmm. Or somebody that styles your hair.
Perhaps.
A stylist.
That's a ist.
Oh, is there a difference? Keen was my stylist.
She's keen looking. I like he had these little poems.
But the prose is like that for every story, every page. It's
good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad you liked it then. You hadn't read these before, right, Mike?
Never read. First three stories I read of Conan were a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's
fantastic
cool.
stuff, though.
Okay, yeah. So you have a really fresh opinion as opposed to the other three of us who have had more experience, but not. And I've forgotten reading the original stuff when I was gesturing those books over there that were the reprints of the ones you had. But I think those go back to like the 80s when I was doing that, or 90s. But he has these little poems too. This was in the original, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
In each section, so section two: "When I was a fighting man, the kettle drums they beat. The people scattered gold dust before my horse's feet. But now I am a great king, and the people hound my track with poison in my wine cup and daggers at my back."
Wow.
The Road of Kings.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's great stuff. And when you read bad writing, well, I'm very sensitive to bad writing, and I don't like bad writing. Some people are...
Because of your superior intellect.
Well, I don't know that that's it, but...
It wasn't of course, a limerick.
That would explain it. But good writing is just great to see. I just really,
really
appreciate
really
it
fun
here.
To read.
And Dave, you just passed a picture of a baboon, and I noticed that.
Yeah, this baboon was the monster. Where did he come from?
Was mentioned a couple of times in the story as the
dark shadow thing coming around. Who was he chasing? Who summoned him up? Do you remember? Was it Set?
Well, it was
Set
the Stygian.
Yeah, the Stygian guy.
Who summoned him. Right. His ring.
Oh, yeah, that's
the
right.
ring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Had called this demon
he
up.
He summoned him.
And it wasn't, it was more horrible than anything they'd ever seen. Not quite like a dark ghost, but not yet a baboon. And the fact that he mentioned a baboon makes me think like National Geographic had just come out and they had featured this new creature called a baboon.
It could be.
And it was horrible and maybe bad pictures, kind of like a Sasquatch or something. And so he latched
and
onto that.
What role did that beast do? Did it go kill somebody?
It dispatched Escalante.
That's right. Yes. Okay. And Conan killed all the guards and people coming to get him.
The Stygian had called up the beast and said, "Go kill Escalante and everybody else in the room." And so when the beast appeared, it dispatched Escalante. Other people ran screaming from the room, and I love that.
Some of the civilized people.
Yes, some of the other people that had not. Conan had not yet dispatched, went screaming from the room. So horrible was this thing.
In fact, when Escalante died, I did note this in the writing that struck me as maybe unexpected. "Then Escalante's cynical and all-sufficient philosophy deserted him, and with a ghastly cry, he gave up the ghost before those slavering fangs touched him." Gave up the ghost?
He gave it up.
I'm like, wait a minute. Did that fit in this story? He gave up the ghost.
There may have been one or two parts where it was a little, sounded a little
modern,
forced.
Or something.
Well, just forced. Like
he may have been the first person to use that phrase.
Well, that's again, that then it would never be acceptable.
That. Yeah. Is that a way of saying that he died of fright rather than
I think so? Yeah.
Of
yeah.
savage rending.
Yeah, I think that, so.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gave up the ghost.
He gave it up.
Interesting.
The Holy Ghost.
And Jeff, do you have readings for each of these, or did you do more for this one?
I have, yes, I've got another reading here.
For this story?
Yes. Conan put his back against the wall and lifted his axe. He stood like an image of an unconquerable primordial, legs braced far apart, head thrust forward, one hand clutching the wall for support, the other gripping the axe on high, with the great corded muscles standing out in iron ridges. And his features frozen in a death snarl of fury, his eyes blazing terribly through the mist of blood which veiled them. The men faltered. Wild, criminal, and dissolute though they were, yet they came of a breed of men called civilized, with a civilized background. Here was the barbarian, the natural killer. They shrank back. The dying tiger could still deal death. Conan sensed their uncertainty, and grinned mirthlessly and ferociously. "Who dies first?" he mumbled through smashed and bloody lips. And that's the Conan we've all come to know and love, where he is not giving up.
And that reading points out that Robert E. Howard thing, right? Between the civilized and the natural, barbaric, noble savage.
Right. And that's what I love. I think that's one of the things, and I was trying to think, why do I like Conan? Why do I like him as a character? And why has he become so iconic? And I think part of it is that barbarian side of him that kind of makes his own decisions for his own reasons. And most of the time, I think they're justified. Some of the times, I think he's a little out of line. When we get to the next, I think the next story, I'm thinking, wow, that seemed a little harsh, doling out some pretty heavy punishment there.
But in this story, that punishment...
Sorry, I mean the third story.
Okay, and this one, it was deserved. These
it
were
was
the guys
deserved,
coming
yes.
to get him, right?
Right.
And this quote from page 11, there was nothing deliberate or measured about his actions. Either he was perfectly at rest, still as a bronze statue, or else he was in motion, not with the jerky quickness of overtense nerves, but with a cat-like speed that blurred the sight which tried to follow him.
Unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, let's save that for later.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But, you
don't
know,
want to wreck it.
I thought that really, too, got to that he's at rest, he's moving, and that's being civilized and being into our technology and being all wrapped up in our civilized stuff. I don't know. When he said this, I sometimes when I'm scrolling between windows on my computer at work, do you ever do this where you're like, start an email and then like something pops over here? Oh, this just came in. You fly over here, you look at this. And then you're like, where was I? Oh, yeah, I got to do the homework thing on the... So I better click on here. I start doing the homework thing.
Yeah.
And suddenly I stop and go, stop. My brain does not function well like this. This is like making me the jerky quickness of overtense nerves. Sorry, true confessions. Thank
and
you.
Really.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you.
And really what you want to do is draw your sword... Yes. And just be your natural barbarian self. At the
Conan
expense of your students.
He despises things which are unnatural because he is natural. He constantly follows his instinct so that when he runs up against something that is magical or demonic in nature, it's something that he's completely opposed to, be it a benevolent spirit or not, he doesn't like it in any way, shape, or form.
That is correct. He always has an aversion to unnatural things, and he also thinks, I remember from the comics, he can't cut with steel if it's too supernatural.
Mm.
Yeah, out of his element.
But he's got some compassion to him. I mean, there was a mention early on, I think, it was one of the conspirators was a poet. Can't remember who it was. Maybe it might have been Rinaldo. And the Stygian and Escalante were talking and said, so why does this poet hate Conan. And he says, well, you know, he hates anything that's in power. That's what poets do.
They hate, that's right.
They want to depose people that are in power. Later on, Conan
was that poets?
And Prospero were talking about Rinaldo. And Prospero says to Conan, you know, you should have gotten rid of him. And Conan said, no, he's a poet.
Oh, yeah.
And he deserves his voice. And when I'm gone, his poetry will live on. People won't remember me, but his poetry will go on. And I thought, wow, that's
cool.
That's an interesting look into the character.
Yeah.
He should have killed him.
Was the poet that wanted to get rid of those in power, was his name Bernie?
Bernie, yes.
You know, I noticed...
Bernie Rinaldo.
I noticed more gods here that I never heard of. On page 26, someone concluded wrathfully, maybe that was Conan, Crom, he swore, but then later, by Babd, Morrigan, Macha, and Nemain.
Oh, yeah, I don't know them.
I thought, whoa, haven't heard of those ones. Have you, Dennis?
No, Nemain sounds familiar, but I think it's Nemedian. And again, I think that goes back to Kull rather than Conan. Although, if you follow Howard and his writing history, Kull precedes Conan, as our intro talked about Conan existing in the time after the sinking of Atlantis. Kull was from Atlantis, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
So there may have been references to deities that no longer existed in popular religious circles,
right,
but may still exist in lore for the people of the time.
Well, and I like how when you're not sure which one to call on, you just call on all four of those guys in one sentence.
Yeah.
When in doubt, name them all.
Name them all.
Name them out.
Yeah. So that was the... Well, and then Conan...
At the end of the story.
Amazingly vanquishes the beast, and it turns into nothing. It just sort of disappears. Stains the floor badly, though.
Oh, yeah,
I think they're going to need a rug there or something, probably, to cover that up. That's going to be ugly. He's probably going to want to move out of there. You know, one thing that I wondered about was, how did he get to be king?
I did read it in the comics. They covered all the stories, and then they started trying to do original stuff, and they started adding in Kull and his other character who fought in Puritan England, killed demons and witches, and...
Solomon Cain.
Okay. Solomon Cain, and yeah, they started doing other stories and Red Sonja, and so I know, but I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Everybody in his time seems to be a usurper of one form or another, so he was just another in the line.
Yeah, I just don't, I never quite got a sense that he had like a big army behind him
or a lot of supporters.
Just suddenly he's like, he just got to be king. And apparently, maybe he was not a good king. I can't tell.
He wasn't into it that much.
Yeah.
You know, once he was...
Like he was a reluctant king, you think?
Well, yeah, I'm going to guess. In other stories, I think he helped overthrow other people too. But he's certainly at the head of many various armies all throughout the Conan stories and sailor groups and so on. Becomes the captain of a ship, becomes a leader of this group and that group, and eventually, I think it was the overthrow for good cause. But Conan as king, you know, he's not barbarian anymore. He's stuck in civilization.
Yeah. He likes to be responsible for himself and maybe a few people that he needs as a crew or helpers, but certainly not a nation or a city or a state.
Yeah.
It's too much for him.
Yeah. And he doesn't care.
And the goings on. Right, thus ends the Phoenix on the Sword?
Yes.
And next up
the Phoenix on the Sword had something to do with his ability to kill the beast.
Oh, that's the symbol of Mitra.
You're right. All right, and the next story?
The Frost Giant's Daughter?
Oh, I like this story.
Nice name.
Yeah. And what I like about this story...
I just like Frost Giants.
I like the Frost Giants because I had a poster from the Frazetta... Frost Giant, the Frazetta Frost Giants poster, and hanging on my wall in college. And I loved that poster.
Yeah.
Nothing like it. So, having read this story this time, and I didn't remember anything about this story, so it was fun to read. And I like it because it's just a lot of action. So where does this one, how does this one pick up, Dave?
Well, this opens up with, I put a really good opening two paragraphs, if I may. The clangor of the swords had died away, the shouting of the slaughter was hushed, and silence lay on the red-stained snow. The bleak, pale sun that glittered so blindingly from the ice fields and the snow-covered plains struck sheens of silver from rent corslet and broken blade where the dead lay as they had fallen. The nerveless hand yet gripped the broken hilt, helmeted heads back drawn in the death throes, tilted red beards and golden beards grimly upward as if in the last invocation to Ymir, the frost giant, god of a warrior race.
Wow.
Now, this is right, Mike?
I know, it's great stuff.
That is great. The heads bent back, and I think the red beards and the golden beards are the two Vanir, the Asgardian. So now he's up in the north. He's fighting with those northern tribes.
Yes.
And that's the battlefield.
And after I read this story, and I gave my Conan books to a couple of my friends, and they read them. And then we would go out in the snow. When there was fresh snow, we would go out in the woods and trudge through snow, chasing maidens and having fantastical imaginings.
Was that the second time you were in jail, or that the was first time?
That's a confession from my younger years, and we needn't revisit that.
Did you like a lot of mulled wine in the wintertime?
Of course, but of course.
Around Chicago?
I did. And when I went to the liquor store today, because I wanted to buy some beer appropriate for this occasion, and I was looking for Conan a beer, and I thought, well, they have 300 beers here. They must have a Conan beer. And yet, no. But
no,
what I did find was the Dragon Lady beer, so...
It's pretty close.
Close enough.
Pretty good job sticking to the fantasy realm there.
Yeah.
So, no, I like the idea of you guys crunching around. I don't think that's strange at all.
Yeah. We did. And we dreamed of making a Conan movie. We thought if we were going to make a Conan movie. Because in those days, we had a Super 8 movie camera, and we used to make little films.
I did, too.
Yeah.
Jeff, if we had met when we were younger.
Oh, we would have. We would have been like Spielberg and Lucas.
We would have been. Instead, we meet this late, and we have these two stupid podcasts we do. We make our friends come to them.
Oh, yeah, and remind us before you go, guys, that we'll to pay you
for coming. For being your friend.
We appreciate it. Yeah, for being our friend.
The beer helped.
Yeah.
So Conan's out here, right? Was he unconscious, and then he kind of slowly comes to? And
I don't know that he was unconscious. And apparently a big battle had gone on, but he was a little dazed, I think. Yeah. And then he sees...
The Frost Giant's daughter gets right into it. It's a shorter story than the last, mm-hmm. right? And I know he says, I've seen the hoarfrost glittering in the sun. So what's hoarfrost?
H-O-A-R.
Okay.
It's
not W-H-O-R.
It's like frozen dew. It's not a solid frost like you see in the fall when winter hits. It's something that would be burnt off very quickly by the sun. Just a little bit of glisten. To the grass and stuff.
I knew he brought you for a reason tonight.
I looked it up.
Oh, did you?
Especially because it wasn't spelled the way I thought it was going to be spelled.
And then, did she save his life was my question. Then why do you not rise and follow me? Who is the strong warrior who falls down before me? She chanted in maddening mockery. Lie down and die in the snow with the other fools, Conan of the Black Hair. You cannot follow where I lead. I'm wondering, so this is like, I think he's near death.
Yeah.
And she comes along, because she's like a Valkyrie, right? Well, she's the Frost Giant's daughter, not a Valkyrie. But a Valkyrie, of course, in Norse legend, comes down and takes the great warriors back up to Asgard.
Yeah.
Right? So he's probably expecting a Valkyrie if he's going to die on this battlefield, but instead she comes kind of mocking, gotta lie down and die with the other fools, Conan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, and he's like,
that
I'm not going to die.
Yes.
Right? I think she saves his life, and he gets up and then starts to...
He shakes it off and starts chasing her. And I like the line that where her feet were whiter than the snow. Her skin was so fair, her feet were whiter than the snow. And I thought, I don't find that attractive. I mean, that's me. I like a woman with a tan. I don't think I would have chased her.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have chased her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm more of a California guy.
I just got a bad vibe at the start of the story because Ymir was mentioned, and if you look back at Asgardian or Norse legend, Ymir and the Frost Giants are nothing like Asgard. You're not going to go entangle with them for any kind of reward. You're going to get your behind handed to you if you're lucky. So that when she was there, I smelled something really bad was going on.
Okay.
And saw her as more of a warning than an encouragement to get up and come to or recover from the effects of the battle.
Yeah, I actually thought she was, right away, I thought she's goading him. She's luring him.
Mm-hmm. And then all the nothing running good is gonna come and running after you've just been through a battle isn't going to do your internals much good. Yeah.
And he chases her and chases her and chases her. And she runs off and it gets to the point where she runs off, her figure in his vision gets smaller and smaller, almost disappears, and then he starts chasing her through this snow, and he catches up with her finally.
Yes.
Which is quite a feat.
But he's Conan.
But he's Conan. And he's indefatigable, as right. they say in Monty Python. Indefatigable. Indefatigable.
Yeah, and so Ymir does come from Norse mythology. Ymir, Orgrimmar, Brimir, or Blain is the ancestor of all Jotnar, attested in the Poetic Edda, compiled in the 13th century.
I will take your word for
it. That's what Wikipedia says. Well,
must be true.
But Ymir also, wasn't that animated monster in 20 Fathoms Under the Sea or something? The Y-M-I-E-R. Harryhausen creature. Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. It was spelled the same way. Yeah.
A Harryhausen.
20 million miles to Earth.
20 million miles to Earth.
Oh. Thank you.
Yes.
The Ymir. Yeah, there's models of him. Yeah, I don't have them, but feel free to put it on my Christmas list, boys.
Yeah. Okay.
Looks a lot like the Kraken.
Yeah.
It does, yeah. Well, I think it was normal in those days for people to borrow. You know, composers borrowed from other composers, and writers borrowed from other writers.
He had to reuse his models, too.
Yeah.
He's creating a world of, you mean for Harryhausen to do, yeah. But for Howard, he's keeping this as a based Earth-based previous age.
Yeah.
That works well. Right. And then he fights the giants, right, that actually come?
Yeah, and we've got a little reading here of her taunting him and leading him on and leading him to the point where they meet the frost giants.
On and on she led, and Conan followed. Black curses drooled through the Sumerian's parched lips. The great veins in his temples swelled and throbbed, and his teeth gnashed. "You cannot escape me," he roared. "Lead me into a trap, and I'll pile the heads of your kinsmen at your feet. Hide from me, and I'll tear apart the mountains to find you. I'll follow you to hell." Her maddening laughter floated back to him, and foam flew from the barbarian's lips. Further and further into the waste she led him. The land changed. The wide plains gave way to low hills, marching upward in broken ranges. Far to the north he caught a glimpse of towering mountains, blue with the distance, or white with the eternal snows. Above these mountains shone the flaring rays of the Borealis. They spread fanwise into the sky, frosty blades of cold flaming light, changing in color, growing and brightening. Above him the skies glowed and crackled with strange lights and gleams. The snow shone weirdly, now frosty blue, now icy crimson, now cold silver. Through a shimmering, icy realm of enchantment, Conan plunged doggedly onward in a crystalline maze where the only reality was the white body dancing across the glittering snow beyond his reach. Ever beyond his reach. He did not wonder at the strangeness of it all, not even when two gigantic figures rose up to bar his way. The scales of their mail were white with hoarfrost. Their helmets and their axes were covered with ice. Snow sprinkled their locks. In their beards were spikes of icicles. Their eyes were cold as the lights that streamed from above them. "Brothers," cried the girl, dancing between them, "look who follows. I have brought you a man to slay. Take his heart, that we may lay it smoking on our father's board."
There's that hoarfrost again.
There yeah, it is.
It was good hoarfrost music, too.
It was great music.
And
who's our music producer, Jeff?
I'll pull that up in a moment. Yeah, but I stopped there because what I wanted to do was read all of the action sequences because those are the most fun.
Yes,
but I refrained.
Yeah,
I restrained myself
wisely.
And I thought, yeah, let people read those. Now that the coming passages, there's a lot of great action. And so three or four paragraphs where he's fighting the frost giants.
But again, the description here, right, Mike?
Oh gosh, the prose style is just so surprising. I just was very surprised by it.
And,
from the 30s, from the Texan, from the barbarian.
Yeah, and a Texan. not that we're against Texans in any way.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Here we are. No, I know we're not.
But don't you think it's fantastic that although he uses this great fight between Conan and the two giants, he starts the story and makes you use your imagination as you view the remnants of a battle.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, you're seeing that there must have been some titanic struggle between Conan and his group, of which he's the only survivor, and this other brigade of northern...
Yeah, Vanir and Aesir.
And you don't see it.
Right.
And it almost, he tells more by letting you just imagine that all yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. And you know, it does just remember now, when I was reading these in the 90s, my literacy teacher, or a language arts teacher at school, had asked me, what are you reading lately, Dave? And I hesitated. This is before they knew I was a gamer and a military gamer, whatever, a fantasy guy, you know, Planet of the Apes fan. And I was like, you know, and I said, no, I'm going to say it. I'm reading the Howard Conan stuff. And he said, you know, I have heard that that's really well-written stuff. That is what he said. And I remember going, oh, good, I get the okay from the
literary teacher.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And it maybe that's why, because when I started reading Sword and Sorcery, as it was called in those days, I read Tolkien and Howard, and maybe it put the bar really high. But when I read some of the stuff that's out these days, and I sound like an old curmudgeon, like, yeah, this modern stuff is no good. And there are some very good authors out there, obviously, but some of them are really horrible. I mean, the George Martin stuff, I think, is really well, very, very well written. But there are many, many other authors who keep churning out books, and it's just like, wow, this stuff is horrible. I buy it, but I can't read it. Are you a critical reader, Mike? Do you have stuff where you just think, boy, the writing's so horrible, I can't do it?
Yeah, I'm usually looking into a book or a series of books before I even start. But I've started, because I read a lot of mysteries, but so I've started a series and put it down after a book or after half a book. I usually like to give it 50 pages.
Yeah.
So after 50 pages, if it's not doing it, then find something else.
Yeah.
So.
And yet there are authors who are New York Times bestsellers, and I'll pick them up and I'll go through 50 pages and think, phew.
Yeah.
Really?
This is bad. And maybe it's because I've read such good stuff. Very early on, I read a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
And because in those days, if you wanted to get something published, you had to take it to a publisher, and the publisher would, if it was no good, the publisher would say, I'm not going to publish this, and the guy would disappear.
Well, that's what happened to Howard, right? I mean, he went several times with several
stories
and several revisions even of the first story. So
now anybody can publish. You can just publish stuff on Amazon and generate all these false good reviews, and people buy it, and then they find out it's no damn good.
Or they've
never read anything good, so they don't know any better.
Yeah.
That could be probably the bigger problem maybe today.
It helps if you're one of the first people in a genre to go and become popular, because in part, at least, your style mm-hmm. is very solid, and people appreciate your style as well as the story itself.
Did subsequent fantasy writers feel like they had to sound like Howard?
I think a lot of them have over the years.
Okay.
And that's why I'm agreeing with Jeff in that I believe a lot of the current fantasy writers just copycat and mass-produce stories that are formulaic mm-hmm. in nature. They don't try to come up with something that is definitely different and has a uniqueness to it. Mm-hmm. They just follow Howard's style in many ways, as do people with the artwork that goes along with it. You look at Frazetta, and you look at people who do current artwork for many of the paperbacks and stuff, and you see people copy.
Yeah.
Nothing new. Mm-hmm. But you can't improve on some things very well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that a Picasso would do very well with illustrating a Conan.
No.
Everything cubist.
Were all the other Conan writers that came after, are they anything like this prose-wise, you know, style-wise?
I am not that well-read in it, really. These guys are.
I'm thinking of one that's a personal favorite for me, Michael Moorcock.
Okay,
Does some things that I think are pretty good. And he uses Atlantis as a background, which tends to make it more cult-like, but he adds a lot more magic to his sword and sorcery. The sorcery is part of the sword mm-hmm. wielder's armament, if you will. That kind of changes it and makes it a little bit different kind of a hero. Hence, he doesn't copy Howard all that much.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But still uses Conan and the Sumerian and the world the same.
Moorcock is a different author entirely.
But he doesn't. He writes Conan or
no. He doesn't write Conan. His character is Elric.
The ones who did the Sprague and the other one I mentioned, Carter at the beginning. I think I remember even reading in the comic book Savage Sword. It still stuck with me that there was debate over whether they should even be writing Conan stuff.
It just doesn't seem like you could copy Howard's style at all. It'd be so hard to do.
Yeah. Now, Savage Sword, is that the black and white?
The big black and white. Black and white.
Conan was always clad in like an animal skin.
Loincloth
type thing.
Yeah, although also with chainmail.
Yeah. And it's funny because I never imagined him, when I the few times that I read Savage Sword, I thought, I never imagined him wearing that. And he's always wearing that, like no matter how bad the weather is.
Well,
he's always in his.
He'll
shorts.
Also have a cloak
Okay, he's out in the snow. Well, and he's wearing a loincloth.
I mean, really, look at young kids today. Don't they go out in their shorts all the time in the winter? Yeah. Okay. They'll have their hoodie and their shorts. Okay. So those
I can see
those you thews, those,
but they
those
do wear
thighs.
Boots, and so does Conan. Usually wolfskin or something like that.
When are boots going to come back into fashion? I really want to wear
boots.
For
men, yes.
Yes,
I know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Should we go to The God in the Bowl?
Yes.
Story 3 for tonight.
Story 3. What's
that
story
about? Well, this one, I thought, this one read like a murder mystery.
Oh,
now, Mike, you're the mystery guy.
I know. I love mysteries, and that's I really like this one.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me some more. Because
I'm not really.
Do you remember the story?
No.
Oh, okay.
You better go.
It's funny because as I was reading it, I thought, God, this is like a Charlie Chan movie. And Conan was a bit of a bystander.
He was a bystander. He just kind
of threw a lot of it as
he wasn't king yet.
So I don't know. What did you think, Dennis?
I thought it was a really great story because it held you in suspense trying to figure out what was going on. The mystery aspect of it was fantastic, along with it being magical in nature.
Yeah, it had and the thing out of the bowl, wasn't that the snake thing?
Yeah, a mummified, mm-hmm. Released creature.
The snake was the bad guy, though, which is kind of common, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's so many poor snakes.
But it wasn't really a snake, though. It was sort of a demigod or son of a demon, I believe.
I have the last paragraph here. At last, the movement ceased, and Conan looked gingerly behind the screen. Then the full horror of it rushed over the Cimmerian. He fled, nor did he slacken his headlong flight until the spires of Numalia faded into the dawn behind him. The thought of Set, again, Set is like a snake goddess, god or god, was like a nightmare, and the children of Set, who once ruled the earth, and who now sleep in their nighted caverns far below the black pyramids beneath that gilded screen. There had been no human body, only the shimmering headless coils of a gigantic serpent. So there was a head that Conan cut off the thing at the end. Yeah. End of the story. Maybe get there too soon, but and so in D&D there's a D&D. Snake
what
Dungeons
D&D?
Dungeons and Dragons. It's a role playing game.
Okay, never heard of it.
There's a whole race of snake people, and they're at various stages. Some are like snakes with a few arms.
Is that like a demonic thing?
No, D&D? they're oh. No.
Are you a devil worshiper?
No. Did you grow up in the 80s?
I've never grown up. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, and I don't know why I can't come up with their name, but I have painted a bunch of miniatures of the snake human types, and they're in various.
Miniatures? You are an
is this,
odd
is this
duck.
Audience? Well, I didn't tromp around the snow, Jeff, pretending it was cold.
Oh, I knew that was going to come back.
Are you speaking
and
bite of
me.
Something like salamander men or
no,
something?
No, not the salamander men. The
Naga?
Naja. Not various.
That one game has a Naga in it.
Well, but it's not just.
Dungeon Twister?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There's a Naga in there.
Yeah, Naga's in there.
And it's not just a Naga. There's also another word for the whole group of people. And they're at various stages of snake development. And they interbreed, and so some are more human than snake. It's set. It's got to come from the Howard stuff right here.
Okay.
And this Naga kind of thing here, too. Right.
So. There's just so many snake villains.
Yeah.
In the Conan stuff.
I wonder if Howard was afraid of snakes.
Texans don't like snakes.
Yeah, I would say that. Well,
they're big and dangerous down there, probably, yeah.
No offense to any Texans, past or present.
And it's interesting because none of the great Eskimo writers talk about snakes.
No, they don't. No, you
don't
right.
See
no,
it
you
at
don't,
all,
you don't hear
really.
That.
Yeah. Mostly it's like walrus.
Gods. Oh, yeah, the giant walrus gods with the deadly fangs.
Chumley, the great walrus god. The gee, Tennessee, I'm going to bite you.
Well, we're going pretty long, aren't we, Jeff?
I think we're here. We're at the end of our show.
Well, did we shortchange the god in the bowl? Apparently everyone liked it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. A mystery.
Okay.
Mike loves a mystery.
I love the snake monster.
Conan just kind of sitting there on the side. Giving people the evil eye if they look like they were going to threaten them.
And finally he'd had enough. And
he'd
he just
enough.
Starts
yeah.
whacking away at people.
Right. But I think he should have chosen a different title than the God in the Bowl.
Oh, because?
Because if you were a young man in your 20s and you had imbibed too much, the God in the Bowl takes on a completely different aspect.
And on that happy note, we're going to wrap up this episode of Spine and Sprocket.
Yes.
No, you can't ask any questions. It's the end of the show. What's happening?
It's just one more thing, maybe.
Oh, it's just off
if you
the
had
rails,
to rank
totally.
The three stories, which would you recommend of the three? Top story.
I would rank number one, number two, number three in that order.
Really? No, I would say God in the Bowl, then number one, then the two.
Oh, okay. Which was this daughter. I love the Frost Giant's daughter, as simple as it was. It was great fantasy, and I like the battle stuff maybe more. You like the mysteries more?
Yep.
Interesting how Howard struck all these things.
I go with the God in the Bowl, the Frost Giant's daughter, and the Phoenix story last.
So we've got different opinions. Mine is the correct one, and if you voted with me,
you must be right.
You must be correct.
There's about a dozen other stories in this book, too.
We're going to continue, but it'll probably be months from now, right? We should go back to military next time, maybe?
Oh, we'll see what happens.
Whatever.
Anyway, it's Spine and Sprocket. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
We never know. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.